Welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. My name is James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our publications Global Corporate Venturing and Global University Venturing. And it's a great pleasure to be back once again with Thierry Hellis, editor of Global University Venturing. Thierry, welcome.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Yeah, well, actually, I've been a bit under the weather, actually, this week, as it happens. I'm dealing with what is colloquially known as man flu. So I think everyone else will roll their eyes, but certainly I've been snuffling away like anyway, how have you been? Hopefully been better than that.
Yes, I haven't suffered with the man flu since my incident in January, but I certainly feel your pain. I know what it's like to come down with sniffles.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. It makes me feel much better. But onwards, what's the news been like while I've been sort of laid up and labouring away?
Well, we've had a few big ones. The week kicked off with one of a long-awaited big one, really. On-demand ride provider Lyft has set the terms for its IPO on Monday, and it's set to raise between $1.9 and $2.1 billion in an offering that will potentially value it at almost $23 billion. That may be a fraction of what its key rival and US market leader Uber will raise when it floats later this spring, but it will still be one of the biggest VC-backed IPOs in recent years. And we have Alphabet, Rakuten, GM, Jaguar Land Rover, Alibaba, Didi Huijing, Magna and Icahn Enterprises, which are all set to score exits.
Yeah, obviously the big one, everyone's been waiting to see when the sort of the US IPOs will kick off with some of the sort of big venture-backed deals. Obviously Uber's potentially next down the track, and there's a number of other ones such as Pinterest and others that people are looking at. And actually it's one of the interesting things that we've been preparing a bit of analysis on is looking at a number of the big Chinese IPOs that have happened over the past year. Their market's been a little bit open, both in the US and in Hong Kong and on the mainland. There's been a good dozen or so big unicorn IPOs, such as obviously Tencent Music and Meituan Dianping and a host of others in that sort of light. And one of the interesting things you find is how many of this sort of Chinese, even pre-IPO companies, have set up corporate venturing units compared to their US counterparts. Obviously, Uber's got some big stakes, actually, it's in Didi Xuxing, but that's more from having set up a business and then sold it on rather than necessarily big corporate venturing operations itself. Lyft, similar, done some things. And I think if you look around, the US pre-IPO companies have been less keen to really sort of use some of the money they've raised from their corporate and venture backers to then develop out ecosystem, certainly in counterparts to the Chinese peers, which have been much more aggressive in not just expanding their main business, but looking more broadly on. And I think it's one of the interesting sort of developments. Perhaps it's a cultural thing. Perhaps it's also lessons learned. If you think about, you know, the big backers of the next wave of Chinese IPOs that have been happening, such as, you know, Didi that will come, Meituan that has been, and obviously Tencent Music, they've really had that sort of partnership corporate venture model ingrained with them through Alibaba, Tencent, JD, and Baidu in particular, the big four. Whereas the US ones, even though they've got Alphabet and Rakuten and GM and, you know, Alibaba and Didi, you know, they've not necessarily taken that on themselves. So just one thought, and I think we'll get a bit more data to show that.
Awesome, very interesting. Well, we are staying in Asia with a consortium including Suning, Tencent, Alibaba and Chongqing Shang'an Automobile, Dongfeng Motor and FAW, which have pumped $1.46 billion into a new entity that will focus on mobility technology and, in particular, ride-hailing. The vehicle will make investments in the sector in addition to putting together its own service, one that will presumably benefit from the corporate's existing technology, though that would point up against Didi Xuxing, the Chinese on-demand ride giant in which both Alibaba and Tencent are already investors, and which apparently is dominating 90% of the domestic market.
Yeah, well, Didi was obviously the fantastic play for sort of, hey, the merger of Didi and Xuxing and then taking over Uber's Chinese operation. It's been just such a great, fantastic platform and play for them. But this new consortium back in the new entity, I think is really exciting. I mean, that's just such a big amount of money for effectively a startup, but it's a real testament to the ambition of what people can set up and in effect create as whole new markets. It's it's going to be perhaps more challenging if they're going really head to head with Didi Xuxing, I would suspect, but I think they probably got a different play with the mobility technology, which will enable them to circumvent probably the most head-to-head competition. That would be a guess for me.
Yeah. I think one of the key sectors that they would want to focus is new energy vehicles, or kind of electric vehicles, that kind of stuff, which I imagine DD will also pursue eventually, but might give them a slightly different edge starting up.
Yeah, that makes sense, Thierry. I like that. Yeah, I definitely think the sort of, if you look at some of the big startups that have come out, you know, particularly from China, looking at EV and electricity, not a lot of them have really sort of created that big traction in the way that perhaps Tesla's taken a lot of the PR and attention span in the West, and there's catch up on the mainstream providers. But China still feels that, given the size of the market and its sort of leapfrog technology to EV and electricity more generally, there's a whole host of space and opportunities there.
Well, another quite interesting area is OneWeb, which recently launched the first 6 satellites that will make up part of a constellation which will provide high-speed internet to remote areas. It's also raised a further $1.25 billion in a round that included existing investors SoftBank, Qualcomm and Grupo Salinas. It has now received some $3.4 billion in funding altogether, and the latest cash will be used to ramp up satellite production and launches.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a great history in terms of satellites, you know, both the sort of traditional players such as sort of an Inmarsat. SoftBank had a big play a couple of years ago trying to sort of merge and create a really big entity in that space. They obviously are still backing OneWeb and giving them a lot more money to develop out. But I think if you look at the excitement that, say, SpaceX has been creating, there's a lot of talk that the sort of space tourism market alone will be tens of billions as a market opportunity in the next 10, 20 years. Pinch of salt, perhaps. But still, you know, in terms of satellite, in terms of connecting up the other half of the world which want internet connection, you know, let alone phone connections, there's still fantastic opportunities, and satellites still the way to go in many ways to be able to provide that sort of coverage. So obviously OneWeb has been doing something successful. We'll have to see how the competition sort of responds.
Well, something entirely different. On Gov, we've had a new spin-out called Sherlock Biosciences that isn't so much noteworthy for the size of its Series A, which currently stands at $17.5 million plus another $17.5 in grant funding, but for who its 9 scientific founders are, a group of academic researchers, the calibre of which we've seldom seen in a single spin-out. They include, to name but 2, none other than MIT's Wang Zhang, the professor who patented the CRISPR technology in 2014, though there's a legal battle with UC Berkeley, of course, which had filed a few months earlier but didn't pay for fast-tracking, and David Walt, who previously co-founded the biotech giant Illumina, whose market cap currently stands at nearly $47 billion. Sherlock Biosciences is commercializing 2 platforms based on research at Harvard and Broad Institute, which is a research institute partnered with Harvard and MIT, to develop molecular diagnostics that are able to produce fast, accurate, and inexpensive results for a wide array of needs without requiring lab equipment. One device, Inspector, has already been tested for detecting mutations that cause lung cancer, and the other, also called Sherlock, is being tested in the field for dengue fever, the Zika virus, and Lassa fever in countries in Africa and Central America.
Yeah, fascinating. Like you say, it's a who's who on the board. Sometimes that can cause concern. You've got too many sort of big egos around the table, so it can be hard to knock everyone into one direction. But still, the fact that they have all joined up and signed up for this really shows, I think, the opportunity set. It's always been one of the ironies that some of the sort of research coming out of, you know, out of particularly the medical field, yours all this still requires, you know, researchers to be, you know, individually drip feeding things into tubes or looking at some of the data and analysing it. And it's just felt in some ways the sort of results are really important. Huge amount of money if you get it right, but the sort of at the back end, you know, it's a sort of labour intensive and destined for, you know, the occasional human error creeping in, you know, which is perhaps why you don't see a lot of the replicability of, you know, the sort of the work and research that come out. And it's been a big cause of consternation and angst within the medical field in particular, is just how few of the papers that are published and are peer-reviewed actually replicable when other people try and follow the same process to examine it. And you know, so having Sherlock, good name, I've got to say, you know, yeah, as a detective, you know, being able to do some of this the background, if you see what I mean, in terms of diagnostics, you know, particularly at a molecular level, could really play into the hands of some of the big sort of chip and big IT firms that are moving into this field. So I think the combination of high caliber, well pedigreed board understanding the medical field to say this has got value, allied to probably a sort of more replicable computer processing platform, you know, just sounds super exciting, and hopefully will really create some transformative opportunities in, you know, in dealing with some really awful viruses and diseases. Anyone who's ever seen anyone with dengue fever or don't know so much about Lassa fever, you know, really would wish that there was a cure done sooner on that one.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. This is, I think I wrote about 1,000 words on this, despite the fact that it's quite a small funding story, just the amount of money that has gone in. But it's absolutely fascinating spin out this. So, yeah, I will be keeping a close eye on this one.
What were your thoughts, Thierry, on it? What was your analysis out of it?
I mean, I was mostly, a topic you touched on, it was mostly fascinated by the fact that they managed to bring that many researchers together and how they, because I think the two platforms, Sherlock and Inspector, were developed sort of unrelatedly. Inspector first came out as a, of the Wyss Institute, as something called Dropper, a handheld device. And so how they've managed to pull this together and turn it into one spin out that's targeting a ridiculously wide array of diseases, really, is phenomenal. And then, yeah, as you said, having all these egos, although I imagine if you're part of this spin out, your ego is probably well in check, and your primary aim is to improve the world rather than improving your own reputation. It's just fantastic to see, and yeah, one of the reasons I really love this job, getting to track stories like this.
Yeah, well, no, fascinating. I definitely look forward to seeing more of that, and encourage people to, you know, be going into Global University Venture. And I think you've got a few of these types of people come into the symposium, actually, in terms of Oxford and Cambridge and others, you know, really sharing some of the insights. But it's really groundbreaking work, and often, you know, although there's some good grant funding, the corporations are really keen to follow on and support some of this areas.
We should have a really good crowd together at the Gov Fusion Summit in GCV Symposium in London on May 22nd and 23rd. So I think we still have tickets. If people want to get on that, they better do it quickly, because I think we've sold out for the last several years running. So
I think we're nearly there. Not quite that. We've still got a little bit. It's usually the final month that the sort of the real ramp up happens. But good. Well, I'll let you sort of run through the main news in brief.
That is perfectly fine. Go get some rest, Jim. Well, okay, let's get on with the regular news then. We have Diehl's flexible electronics display developer Royoli Group is said to be preparing its IPO, but will reportedly first look to raise about $1 billion in funding at a valuation of near to $8 billion. The China-based company has so far received more than $1 billion since being founded from investors including Yuxiu Group, and was valued at $5 billion as of 2017. UiPath, the creator of a robotics processing automation platform, has so far raised $550 million in funding from investors including Capital G, the Alphabet subsidiary that used to be known as Google Capital, but is reportedly now chasing a further $400 million. The prospective round would value it at $7 billion, and it is said to be led by a thus far unnamed public institutional investor. Carmakers Hyundai and Kia combined to invest $250 million in Grab late last year, and have now combined again to provide $300 million in funding for another Asian ride-hailing platform, India-based Ola. The capital looks set to form part of a round expected to close at $1 billion that will value Ola, which also counts SoftBank, Tencent and Didi Huijing, as investors at more than $6 billion. Property trading services platform OneDoor has meanwhile closed a $300 million round backed by Lena, SoftBank Vision Fund, GV and Access Technology Ventures at a $3.8 billion valuation. The company has received $1.35 billion in funding altogether, and the latest funding will support product development and the strengthening of its presence in North America. Then we have Legend Capital-backed mobile commerce platform Wish, which may be a long way from profitability, but it looks like it can still raise money. Wish, reportedly valued at $8.5 billion in late 2017, is in negotiations with prospective investors, including General Atlantic, to raise $300 million at a reported $11 billion pre-money valuation. The round would also include undisclosed additional investors. Marketa is also seeking funding at a unicorn valuation, having filed to raise $250 million at a valuation of nearly $1.9 billion. Visa, Credit East, and Commerzbank are all among the investors in Marketa, the developer of a service that allows businesses to issue their own payment cards and process payments. The company has so far raised a total of $116 million and was valued at $545 million when it last raised money in June. Elsewhere in Asia, meanwhile, India-based online video streaming platform Hotstar has secured $153 million from 21st Century Fox subsidiaries Star India and Star US. The platform is owned by Star India division Novi Digital Entertainment, and Star India put up $121 million of the money, which was raised as Hotstar gets ready to debut its own original programming towards the end of this month. Airbnb is in talks to invest $100 million to $200 million in another short-term accommodation platform, Oyo, which was valued at $5 billion as of a $1 billion round it closed last month. The funding would support international expansion for India-based Oyo, whose existing backers include SoftBank, Didi Chuxing, Grab and China Lodging Group. And finally, cosmetics brand Glossier is the e-commerce sector's newest unicorn, raising $100 million in a Sequoia-led Series D round that valued it at $1.2 billion. Glossier has now received nearly $190 million in funding altogether from backers including talent agency WME, which invested in the company's $8.4 million Series A round 5 years ago. Now then, let's look at funds. Hanwha Asset Management, an investment subsidiary of diversified South Korea-based conglomerate Hanwha, has joined venture capital firm Golden Gate Ventures to raise $200 million for an investment partnership. The two have already secured $80 million in capital for the fund from external investors, according to people familiar with the matter. The as-yet-unnamed unit will target consumer-focused technology companies in Southeast Asia, investing around Series B stage. New Margin Ventures, a China-based investment firm backed by food producer Kerry Group and telecoms equipment provider Motorola Solutions, has reached the first close of a $1.48 billion fund. The fund so far raised approximately $187 million from limited partners including state-owned conglomerate China Everbright and two government-backed funds, New Margin revealed in a statement on its WeChat account. And coffeehouse chain Starbucks provided $100 million for a US-based investment firm Valor Equity Partners' Valor Siren Ventures 1 fund as the vehicle's cornerstone investor. The fund has a target size of $400 million and will seek the remaining $300 million from additional strategic partners and institutional investors over the coming months. It's focusing on startups working on technologies, products and services in the food and retail sectors. Starbucks' commitment to the fund is the first time it has made such a move and comes as it recognizes the increasing importance of both verticals for its core business. The corporate will also explore direct commercial arrangements with the fund's portfolio companies. Moving on to exits. SenseTime has long been rumoured to be joining the IPO queue, and now its chief rival in China's facial recognition space, Megvii, is reportedly looking to raise $800 million in an offering that could take place in the US or Hong Kong. Its investors include Alibaba and its Ant Financial affiliate, as well as Foxconn, SK Group and Legend Holdings unit Legend Star. It was reportedly valued at $3.5 billion as of December. Alcon, the eye care subsidiary of pharmaceutical company Novartis, has agreed to acquire portfolio company PowerVision in a $285 million deal that will also enable Johnson & Johnson and Medtronic to exit. The latter two had been investors in the intraocular lens implant developer since 2012, before joining Alcon in a Series D round that closed 4 years later. PowerVision had raised approximately $106 million in VC funding altogether. And Fastly, the content delivery platform developer that counts OATV, Deutsche Telekom Capital Partners and Swisscom Ventures as investors, has begun hiring underwriters for an IPO that could reportedly value it in excess of $1 billion. The offering would come in the wake of $220 million of funding since Fastly was founded in 2011. And on Gov, NerveGen Pharma, a Canada-based developer of nerve damage therapies based on Case Western Reserve University research, has completed an initial public offering which raised proceeds of $10 million Canadian dollars, or $7.5 US million. NerveGen commenced trading on Canada's TSX Venture Exchange after issuing 10 million common shares priced at $1 Canadian each, bringing the company to the top of its $5.3 million to $7.5 million range. And finally, people. Henry Choi, formerly a principal at VC and private equity firm Korea Investment Partners, has joined Hana Ventures, South Korea-based financial services firm Hana Financial Group's $1 trillion or $894 million fund of funds. Choi will head Hana Ventures' global investment efforts. Launched in December 2018, Hana Ventures is understood to be the first corporate venture subsidiary set up by a Korea-headquartered financial services firm. Christina Hagee, meanwhile, has left her role as investment principal at JetBlue Technology Ventures, US-based airline operator JetBlue's corporate venture subsidiary, to join internet technology provider Google. Hagee, who came 24th in this year's Global Corporate Venturing Rising Stars ranking, initially joined JTV in 2016 as an investment associate before being promoted in late 2017. She previously worked in a senior marketing role for Checkmate. And finally, Catherine Koo, the former executive director of Stanford University's Office of Technology Licensing, has taken up a position as chief licensing advisor at law firm Wilson Sonsini Goodrich & Rosati. Koo will work from the law firm's technology transaction practice in Palo Alto, offering clients insights into company formation and tech licensing gained from more than 27 years at the helm of OTL, which ended in June 2018. And that is it for this week's news and the Global Venturing Review podcast. If you do have any feedback, feel free to email me. You can reach me at thelis@globaluniversityventuring.com. That's THELES @globaluniversityventuring.com. Feel free to leave us a review on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you download this podcast from. And don't forget to recommend us to your friends and colleagues. On behalf of Jim and myself, I wish you a productive week and we will speak to you again next Monday. Goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.